You are listening to Law and Gospel on KFUO. It's a Rumination Thursday on January the 21st in the year of our Lord 2016. And with us we have our good friend, the Reverend Wes Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Well, yesterday we had a little snow, about an inch and a half. They closed every school down. I understand in Springfield you had, what, about 4 inches and no schools were closed down?
4 to 5, nope, nothing closed. It was blanketed all the way up to Peoria and from Springfield and all the way south towards Effingham. And we didn't close anything, to my knowledge.
Wow. Yeah, I was watching on television. They were starting to close the schools the night before here in St. Louis. But I guess the kids loved it being at home, except that meant that sometimes parents have to stay with them.
Well, that's not a bad deal.
You know, we're talking about, you brought up a subject that I know we're going to have interest in talking about today, and that is how do pastors and Christian congregations deal with delinquents. And we're going to talk about it from a law and gospel perspective. Last evening, for example, I did a Bible study at Hope High Ridge, and they have a worship service just before my Bible study. And a couple had come in. He was Lutheran. She was non-denominational, married. And they sat in on the Bible study. And what I found interesting, the reason they were at church is because it's really hard for them to get up on Sunday mornings to get to church. He has a little illness and some other things. And so, you know, sometimes we have delinquents because your church service, the one I'm going to, you know, is at 10 in the morning. Some are at 9 in the morning. So you got to, I guess, really take a look as to why somebody is delinquent to see if the church can foster them. But what are your thoughts on this idea of delinquents?
Well, what you just described is, I would say they're probably an elderly couple.
Yep.
Or they're a couple, you know, okay, or a couple that have serious illnesses, and you have to pay attention to those kind of things. Like when I was up in Havana, we had a Saturday evening service, and I would say 90% of those that attended on Saturday evening were elderly people. It was easier for them to do that than to come on a Sunday morning.
Oh, I love those Saturday evening services. Why?
Yeah. Because they took you out for pizza.
Oh, well, that's true, too. But I was talking about the service, Wes.
Oh, okay. You know. But back on the topic. But really, when we talk about inactive delinquents, we're thinking about a younger group, you know, or tend to be a younger group, or a healthy group. You know, there's nothing in terms of their health that would prevent them to come.
Yeah, they have an ad here on KFUO that once they get out of confirmation, I think they go to college, some 40% of young adults stop going to church, and of those, 50% never return.
Yes, and that's a very true statistic. But I've noticed in our circuit, for instance, the pastors take time to develop their relationship with the confirmand around the church activities, and by church activities, I mean around word and sacrament ministry, the importance of Bible study, and how those things fit into their life on a weekly basis or a daily basis. So there are some things in that area that can be done. And more importantly, statistics also show that what the parents do, the kids do. If the parents consider it important to be in church on Sunday morning, worshiping, the kids do. It doesn't always translate that way, but a good portion do.
I was seeing a movie recently, and I think this is on the topic or the minds of a number of people who send their kids to Sunday school, is they want them to learn how to behave properly. And they think that the church is a good place to learn proper morality, etc. But in the movie that was talking about this, they made no mention at all of trust in Jesus.
Exactly. Right on point. As you know, I'm working with our circuit about that, our circuit churches, which is about 11 churches. And we're going to be looking at inactive unbelievers, things of that nature. And the first one I'm working with is none other than St. Paul's Havana. I meet with him later today as we identify those. And
Part of the problem in getting two delinquents, I found three of them because I'm working with two congregations on this. Number one, very few people have landlines, and it's hard to get a hold of their cell phone. Number two is even if you phone them and they have a landline, a lot of times they don't respond back. People, if they don't know you that well, and I'm not a known pastor to them, I'm helping other congregations. And so what we've done is we had the main pastor write a little note, and then I go to their homes. If they're not home, we leave the note on there with the pastor's phone number, wondering what's going on. But we have discovered that in a sizable minority, they no longer even live there, or they've moved to another state, and others have joined other churches, not necessarily Lutheran, and yet they never did let know the congregation. Some of them are delinquent 2 and 3 years.
Right. You can have a drop-off rate after they've been gone about a month to 6 weeks. If you haven't made contact, they start to lose interest. And if you go a year, a couple of years, just as you described, sometimes they've gone elsewhere.
Yes. Yesterday, I was doing the chapel service here at the IC International Center, and it was really about transfiguration out of Peter, where he's talking about that he had seen the Lord, etc. And in the prayer, I talked about we love mountaintop experiences. Our mountaintop experience, of course, is the divine worship service. And so if you don't put your time in there with a proper sermon, people can get pretty bored with that, and that's part of the reason they don't come to church anymore.
Right. You know, as I researched this through the Internet, it was interesting. I found 8 to 10 sites that were non-Lutheran, and every one of them missed the point. It was when I went to the Missouri Synod site that I found fairly good articles. You know what that was?
Probably the Missouri Synod site talked about Jesus more than the other ones did.
Exactly. The 8 to 10 did a great job of talking about structure, getting to know the person, and finding time, which are important to an extent. But you got to get right down to it that when you make the visit, you got to do your God talk. You got to talk about Jesus.
I think you were speaking about that a lot of churches have been influenced by psychology today, sociology, and they believe that the first thing you need to do is build a relationship. But I remember one of the most successful preachers in the Bible did not want a relationship with the town of Nineveh. His name was Jonah.
Yes, there was an article in The Witness about that from 2008.
Oh, what do they say?
That was the same thing that you're talking about. You know, Jonah didn't want a relationship, but however, it was the message that carried the day.
That is really critical. It's an excellent point that the way a delinquent is brought back into the church isn't so much just by building a relationship, but by getting them to have faith in Jesus Christ. And therefore, when they miss church, they feel like something is missing, you know, in their life. And they haven't been fed. And so when they go to church and they get fed, wow, what a difference it makes.
Right. You know, there was another article from our Synod site that I picked up out of the Lutheran Witness back in October 2007 by Robert Kolb, Reach Out Luther on Missions. And it was interesting. He described the inactive, and he said they were very active in producing works that they thought would merit salvation. And, of course, as we know, Luther was saying salvation by works don't get us into heaven.
Yes, Robert Kolb, in fact, I've had a course with him, excellent one, where he had 8 different situations where you were trying to talk to somebody about evangelism. One of them was like the person was afraid of death, or another one was they thought that their works made a difference as to whether they go to heaven or not. And then he would explain in each of the 8 how you would deal and deal with that person. For example, when you go to a hospital, Wes, and you make 2 visits, one with a woman who is about to have a baby and another one is to have maybe surgery for cancer, are your prayers different?
Oh, definitely.
And how do you decide which Bible verses to use?
Well, you know, with a mother, you're talking about the child and safety of the child and safety of the mother in terms of their health. And
right.
And those in surgery, you're asking God's guidance to the surgeons and to the doctors and nurses, and that God put his healing hand upon that person.
Yes. In fact, I'm on my way after this to a hospital to visit with a gentleman who is in there in rehab. And obviously the prayer for him will not be about having a baby.
Right. Now, there's in that Kolb article, I thought was rather interesting. He brings up Romans 1:16. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, it's the power of God.
Yes.
To everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. So it's the power of the gospel, getting the gospel message out there. And he makes that a very distinctive point that forgiveness is about now, forgiveness of sins. Of course, we point to the day that we go to heaven, but heaven's not a far off place. It's right now that we work with that forgiveness of sins in our lives and in the lives of people around us.
The program you're listening to, folks, is called Law and Gospel because we think that is one of the greatest tools God has given us. If the word law has as its primary goal accusation, what do you think would be the word for gospel?
Hmm.
What's the result that you want out of that?
Forgiveness, Jesus.
Which results in comfort.
Comfort, yeah, you're comforting the individual.
Yes.
And yeah, and he makes that point very distinctive. Mm. He said, Luther would say, you find forgiveness of sins in the church, in the house, in the field, in the garden. And that's where you bring him comfort from the gospel.
See, that's where the Mount of Transfiguration is for us. Because when we go to church, not only is Jesus the shepherd leading the worship service, but you also hear from Moses, Elijah, many other prophets in the Old Testament reading, the apostles in the Gospels and the epistles. So it's really a kind of a mountaintop experience.
Right. I remember when I was on Vicarage, Vicarage is the year that we spend out of the seminary in our parishes learning to become a pastor.
Yes.
And I went to a pastor's conference, and I remember an old-time pastor giving a lecture, and he always maintained for every year that a person hasn't been in church, you got to spend an hour of God talk with them.
Really?
In other words, you can sit and talk about making relationships, getting to know the person, things like that, but that's not God talk. If you spent an hour with the person, and you spent 45 minutes of talking about fishing, hunting, and all kinds of other things, and only 15 minutes, you only spent a quarter hour of God talk. You got to get the time in with the person.
Now, when you talk about God talk, when we go to see a delinquent, do we overemphasize the law and miss out on the gospel, or what's the recipe that one should use with delinquents?
Well, my recipe always started out, we miss you.
Yes.
And then we find out the reasons. the reasons may be valid, they may be invalid, whatever the case may be, but...
Well, people will say, how can there be a valid reason for not coming to church? But we already mentioned the illness and how difficult it is. For example, there are some shut-ins I see that I do not see until 4 or 5 in the afternoon because they're not up till then.
Yeah, or in the nursing home, it takes till the afternoon to get them together. But those are shut-ins. Those are older adults. I'm talking about the younger ones, you know, that they're living at home. You know, they don't have any problems getting to the grocery store, making it to the local restaurants, you know.
Now, some of them, though, for example, in my congregation, I had quite a number of people involved in the medical field, and nurses would often be working on Sunday morning or a policeman. So how do you deal with something like that where they would like to come to church, but they're unable to?
They let you know, you know.
Yes.
You generally spend some time with them, and generally, if you're large enough as a congregation, you have more than one service that they can attend to. That's why many of our churches went to a Wednesday evening or a Saturday evening.
Yes.
By Sunday.
Right. Yeah, or even a Sunday night.
Right.
Yeah. St. James, we never did. When I got there, we had two services in the morning. And on Sunday morning and nowhere else. But I wouldn't hesitate, for example, to send them to a church that did have a Saturday service or a Wednesday service. And then one of the things I know my home congregation, St. Paul de Pere, does here in St. Louis is for both Advent and Lenten services, they continue to have the Lord's Supper. So this is an opportunity for people who can't make it on the weekend to not only come to church, but also have the Lord's Supper.
Right. And you bring up an important point, them coming to the Lord's Supper. But, you know, it's back to the visit. It is spending time talking to them about their relationship with Christ and your relationship with Christ. You know, in the Cove article, he said, all believers wield God's instrument for conveying new life against our sins and evil in our lives. And that's speaking of Christ and the assurance of salvation through Christ who's died upon the cross and rose for us.
Yes, in regard to law and gospel, you could come in with the law and said, you should not forsake the assembling of yourselves together.
I don't think that's why.
Yeah. It's kind of like a restaurant. Their advertising isn't blasting the people for not attending, but instead they're advertising, and then when you go there, their food just tastes so good. And
right.
So when I visit a delinquent, I always like to go through at least one Bible passage that ends up with a interpretation and an application that they were unaware of. But it comforts them, and I say, you know, this is the kind of thing that we have every Sunday morning for you.
One of our churches in our district years ago, I remember how they did it. Their elders, the pastor wrote up a devotion, went through a list of things, and the elders went out and visited everybody in the congregation. And the devotion that he had typed up, they would read, and they would do a Bible
or prayer.
Oh,
really? Yeah.
Yeah, and they would see a drop in their inactives, you know, because they spent time talking. Delinquents have a fairly good idea why you're there, you know.
Yeah, I would understand that for sure. And to leave them feeling guilty sometimes just doesn't work.
No, I think you point them to the gospel. You know, one pastor I know of had gone to visit one, and he, for an hour and a half, heard his member talk about the reasons why he didn't go with all the people in the church. And after each time, he said, that one too. After an hour of that, the guy looked at him and said, Pastor, what do you mean that one too? Jesus died for that one too.
Yeah, that's good. I remember I would take an elder with me sometimes. When I first got to a congregation, I won't tell you which one it was. I've been involved with about six of them. I took the elder, went to the delinquent. He had not been in church for almost 2 years. And so we asked him, you know, why he is absent from the worship service. And he said, I'm not kidding, he said this. Well, last week it snowed and I didn't have my snow tires on. I was planning on coming. It's kind of like watching Cops, where every time they pull somebody over, even if they went through a stop sign or if they have drugs on them, they always have an excuse to try and get them away from the guilt that they feel.
Now, you know, in connection with that, though, too, there is one person that I spent 2 years of talking with them about Christ and the gospel. They'd come in, they'd spend some time, or I'd see them on the street, and it took 2 years, almost 30-some hours plus, that I figured that I spent talking to them, answering questions.
Yes.
So many times it may not be that initial contact that brings them back, but it's the repeat that brings them.
Well, often when you see shut-ins, other relatives are in the room. Either they live in the house or such. And I've seen some of them start coming back to church. What do you think is the most important worship service that could draw people back to church who normally don't attend?
Worship, the most important part of worship service?
No, the most important worship service.
I would imagine communion service.
No, it's one that does not have communion.
Oh, really?
I'm talking about funerals.
Oh, yeah.
Because somebody who won't come to church often will still go to church for the funeral. And I think that that is one of the most important opportunities for a pastor to share the true message of Jesus Christ. In my experience, I've had a number of people not only return to church, but actually become church members because of the funeral sermon, hearing things they had never heard of before, which also gives a different view of Jesus than perhaps they had received in the church in which they were brought up.
No, you're correct. I've been gone from Havana not quite 2 years, and there's a funeral sermon from about 3 years ago they're still talking about.
Yes. Yeah, so I think that's something we really need to look at. The other thing is, I don't hesitate to say, well, look, why don't you call some of your friends? I'll come over and we'll do a Bible study in your house.
Not a bad idea. It's spending time with them, but it's spending time in the gospel.
Word. Yes.
You betcha.
Which reminds me, tonight at Trinity Lutheran Church in Orchard Farm, 7 o'clock, we're doing a Bible study. It's right off Highway 94, about 4 miles from 370 going north. And we're again going to be talking about how Jesus appears in the Old Testament. And a lot of people think that he really didn't appear until he was becoming incarnate, namely his birth. But there are multiple times that Jesus appears in the Old Testament. And that's always a good Bible study because it shows that he was with his people all through the Old Testament, obviously in the New Testament, and then also with us today.
Very good. You know, it's a reminder that all of us, you know, lay people, whatever, we can reach out with that good news. It can be as simple as when Philip talked to Nathaniel, come and see Jesus.
Yes.
You know, we send the pastor out, and he spends a little bit more time going through some of the reasons. But every one of us, you know, spending time, just even a few moments on the street, talking to our neighbor, talking to a friend, and having that good news of Jesus Christ, you know, saying, I miss you, I'd like to see you back in church, things like that, is helpful.
Yeah, I was making a point at a church in which I said, you know, a lot of the people, when they come to church, it's really not due to the pastor. It's because somebody else in the church invited them. And the pastor got up, he went over to one of the counters, picked up a sheet of paper, and gave it to me. And guess what? It was a survey about why people had joined that church, and only 13% had come because of the pastor. The vast majority had come because one of the members had invited them. Then when they heard the pastor, they got excited about the message.
Exactly. That was one of my parishes I served. I talked to a guy for 6 months, nothing happened. He came back and he said, no offense, but he said, I started running into people on the street. He said after about the fourth or fifth time that they missed seeing me at church and missed seeing me at the Lord's Supper, he said, I can see why. And that's what brought me back. It was the witness of others.
Excellent. Good way to end the program today. Thank you very much, Pastor Reimnitz. Hopefully we'll be back and talk with you next Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm Pastor Tom Baker. Tomorrow, Open Mic Friday. Call me at 1-800-730-2727 if you have any question of a theological nature. Till tomorrow, God bless.
Listen to Law and Gospel each weekday at this time on Worldwide KFUO. For a contribution to the program, make your check payable to Law and Gospel and mail it to Pastor Tom Baker, Post Office Box 28910, St. Louis, Missouri 63132. You can call toll-free at 1-877-267-1962 or email lawandgospel@lawandgospel101.com.